Thank you for tuning in to the Essential Church Podcast, a church where we focus on restoration over denomination. If you're in the Virginia Beach area and would like to find out more about Essential Church, visit our webpage at essentialchurch.com.
It's what? I wasn't trying to trick you into saying the D word. I just want to know what you think the next line is. You know, it's funny. There's actually three answers to that question. What's the next line? If you know the song well, first verse, it's what? It's nobody's fault. You know, whatever, you know, the situation I'm in and where I'm at right now and the problems I've got going on, hey, it's nobody's fault. You know, it's just, you know, it's nobody's fault. Second verse, what is it? Well, some people say there's a woman to blame, but, you know, it could be my fault. You know, it could be hers, could be mine, could be circumstance. It could be a number of things. I'm just one of the many possibilities of the situation I'm in of, you know, what may have caused it. It could be my fault. When he gets to the end of the song, though, he says the line that most of you all wanted to quote, and that is, it's my own fault. I know. The reason I am here, the problems I'm in, the situation I'm in, it's my own fault. When I look back over it all, I have to confess I can't keep blaming everybody else and my parents and my situation, everything else. I got to accept it's my own fault. It kind of reminds me of a phrase I've picked up from a lot of you guys in the Navy, gals in the Navy. What happens when you look over at somebody else getting to do something fun that you wish you could be doing while you're looking at what you're doing and thinking you just got the raw deal and thinking, you know, I don't know what it is about the Navy, but it just seems like as if it likes some people and doesn't like some other people. And how come you get to have all the fun? They simply look back and say, hey, you choose your rate, you choose your fate. You choose your rate, you choose your fate. You know, you chose that that's what you wanted to do, and that's what comes with it. That's where you're going to be. I chose this job, and so, yes, I get air-conditioned quarters, and I get an air-conditioned office on the ship. You chose this is what you wanted to do, so your area isn't air-conditioned. So be it. You chose the path you went down. It's like, well, I didn't choose. Listen, at some point along the way, you had a choice. Maybe you didn't study hard. Maybe you didn't get in the right group. Maybe you didn't try to finish first in your class when you went through A school, Q school, B school, whatever school it is you go through where you get to choose at the end of it what it is you're going to do. At some point, you made a choice that contributed to where you're at right now and the rate that you're at and what's going on. You had a choice in that. And you can either continue to say, you know, it's nobody's fault. Well, it could be mine. It could be the Navy's, whatever. Or you can come to the point and say, it's my own fault. Where I'm at right now, it's my own fault. And this goes with all of your life decisions. It's been estimated we make about 35,000 decisions consciously to some level every single day. Can you believe that? 35,000 decisions. You know, every decision. You know, which way am I going to go to work? What am I going to wear this morning? I love how Steve Jobs says, he was asked, why do you wear a black turtleneck? He says, because it's one less decision I have to make every single day. So I just find one that fits. I buy 45 of them, and that's all I ever wear. Okay, so be it. You know, that's one decision less. So now you only have to make 34,999 decisions every single day. But hey, it's one less thing you got to put your mind to. It's been estimated that you'll make 227 food decisions every day. That's a Cornell research study, 227 food decisions. If you decide to go to Cheesecake Factory for lunch, you may quadruple that number since their menu is a whole novel of decisions and choices you could possibly make. And there's endless arrays. You look in your cabinet and you think, what do I want today? Beans, rice, whatever. You have all these choices. What direction you're going to go? What are you going to say? All these ways of how you're going to phrase it, how you're going to answer emails, everything. Decision, 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 decision. What's kind of scary is reading that typically we regret 14 to 20% of the decisions we make. Some of you are thinking, I'm a little higher than that. I don't... There may be some really smart people, wise people somewhere, you know, that I'm balancing out the curve on because I'm somewhere in the 25 to 30%. And the reason why you say that is because, you know, there's a lot of decisions you make that don't impact major aspects of your life, like what you're going to eat today, what you're going to wear today. But there are a few critical decisions you'll make, somewhere between 5 to 10 critical decisions that when analyzed, you realize, you know, those 5 or 6, maybe 10 decisions are the ones that determine the course of my life. Where I'm at today is because of that pivotal decision and that pivotal decision and that pivotal decision. And while what I wear to work may not be a big deal, what I eat this afternoon may not be a big deal, but that decision made a lot of choices for me down the road. That decision opened up a lot of doors or closed a lot of doors. The decisions you make determine the blessings that you experience, and they also determine the consequences you suffer. And so in this series, what we're looking at the next couple of weeks about You Choose is we're going to look at some of the choices that you make, some of these life critical decisions, some of these choices that you really need to get right. Because if you don't get these right, It makes a lot of other decisions very difficult. It makes a lot of life very difficult. It makes a lot of the things that you go through not quite what you want them to be. And so these few decisions, what if you could sort of go with intentionality and choose, this is what I want to make sure I get right. You know, what I wear every day, not a big deal. Where I eat today for lunch, not a big deal. But this decision here, I got to make sure I get that right. And so at the top of the list of those critical life decisions that you've got to make is the decision that you've got to make about God. Is there God? What do I do with God? Because deep within the heart of every person is this, are three questions. Why am I here? Where did I come from? What happens after I die? And all three of those questions that everybody in humanity around the world asks, all of those point to God. Now, I don't want to get so derailed I begin just to talk about the very existence of God. I simply will summarize my views on God by a tour bus experience I had when I was in Australia. We're on this little island called Kangaroo Island. They were talking about how koalas are not native to the island, and so the koala bears are destroying all the eucalyptus trees on this island because it's not their natural habitat. Whereas in their natural habitat over on the mainland of Australia, it works out great. And what the tour bus driver was saying was that the eucalyptus tree, now keep in mind, he does not have a framework of God. He's going from an evolutionary mindset. And where that led him to go to explain the situation was simply this, that over on the mainland, the eucalyptus trees that the koala bear eats have realized that if the koala bear eats all of their leaves, they will die. And so what they do is they sort of adjust the amount of toxins they put in each of the leaves so that about a third of the leaves are edible to the koala and two-thirds of the leaves are not edible to the koala. And that way the koala bear can eat the leaves yet not die. And I'm sitting in the back of the bus going, is he trying to tell me that the tree figured this out? I mean, really, that's where this goes. If you do not believe there's a God that created this universe, you have to at some point conclude the tree figured out, you know, guys, we got to get together, huddle up, huddle up, huddle up, huddle up, huddle up. Them bears, as cute as they are, as much as they're wonderful to have around, they're killing us, man. They're killing us. We got to do something about these bears. But I think they're so cute. They're so sweet. We can't get rid of the bears. We got to keep the bears. Well, hey, how about this? How about we give them about a third of our leaves, let them eat? But we'll make sure they don't eat the other two-thirds. That way we have some, they have some, it all works out. Ready? Good. Break. That's what I'm supposed to believe if there is no God. And everybody on the tour bus is going, wow, man, them trees really figured this thing out. Trees over on this island, they need to get together, you know? That's the problem. These trees need to figure... And nobody in their right mind, if you said back to the tour bus driver, excuse me, I'm a driver, at what point do you think the trees on this island will get a clue and figure out they need to redistribute the toxins in their leaves? That'd be a ridiculous question. So if you want to go down the route and say, I don't know if there is or isn't a God, fine. Just explain to me how these trees make these decisions. You watch all the Discovery Channel shows about the Arctic and about life and about planet Earth, all those things, and watch how they struggle to not say the word designed. Because so many things, down to the finest detail, are perfectly designed to work together in perfect unity. It's just amazing the way all these things work together. And the eucalyptus tree is just one of thousands upon hundreds of thousands of examples, not to mention the fact that the very miracle of life itself, you can't even get it without a miracle. And even scientists go back and they talk about the God moment, the God particle, the I don't know, something happened and it was out of science's realm where all this stuff came to be. So even science traces back to God at some point if you just keep going further and further back. So the question you need to answer then is what will you do with this question of God? What will you do? What will you choose? You see, all of life is about choices. And I believe that God created us. I believe that Genesis actually happened, that it makes so much sense that God placed humanity in the garden and said, okay, you get to choose. Choose a relationship with me, the tree of life, or you can choose to be your own king, be your own God, be your own thing. And it's this tree of knowledge of good and evil where you get to decide what is right and what is wrong. And all of us look around and we see humanity deciding, well, I'm going to make up right and wrong for myself. This is what I believe is right. This is what I believe is okay. And we see the destructive result that humanity brings when it goes down this path. And sometimes people even say, well, I don't know if I can believe in a God because of all these destructive choices humanity makes, of all of the evil there is in the world. And what you have to understand is for love to exist, there has to be evil. You have to have the context for evil because love requires a choice. For love to be love, it can only be love in the context of a choice. You have to have a choice to either accept or reject, to love or to not love, to give your life to another and to submit to what they give them an impact in your life, or say, I'm going to do my own thing. when answering this question about evil, the writer C.S. Lewis. Now, C.S. Lewis was not always a Christian. He didn't always believe in God, but as far as looking and analyzing and really, really discussing and really, really analyzing the question of is there a God or not, comes to the ultimate conclusion and says, by far, there is. And so when he's asked about this question of evil, he says this. He says, why then did God give humanity a free will? And this is coming after he's talked about because of all the evil in the world. Why would God even allow us to make choices when it leads to all this evil? He says, well, because free will, though it makes evil possible, is the only thing that makes possible for any love or goodness or joy worth having. A world where people worked like machines would hardly be worth creating. And the happiness which God designs for his higher creatures is the happiness of being freely and voluntarily united with him and to each other in love and delight. And for that, they've got to be free. And of course, God knew what would happen if they used their freedom the wrong way, and apparently, he thought it was worth the risk. Worth the risk. As a parent, I come to grips with the risk of giving my kids freedom every day. Every time you give that child the freedom to choose, you understand the risk because you're giving them the freedom to go and hurt themselves. Yesterday, the kids went and did Easter egg hunts because, you know, if you're a pastor, that's kind of when you celebrate Easter, is the day before with your family. And so they were out, collected up all this candy. And we always have this debate that goes on between my wife and I, like, okay, do we limit and throttle the candy or do we let them make the choice? So yesterday, we're like, that's it. We'll just let them make their own choice. And we've done this a couple times before. And you know what they do? They overindulge. They then get a stomach ache. We sit back with gleeful delight and say, natural consequences. And so we've been doing this over time, and it was painful to watch them engorge themselves and then get sick, and they need medicines to, you know, help get their digestive tract back on scale where it needs to be. It's painful to go through those experience, but we're sort of finally seeing the benefit of that because, you know, they were able to throttle their own intake, and I was just kind of testing them and having fun. I say I was testing them. I kept bumming candy off the kids all day and just to see how they would react. And finally, Jameson goes, Dad, that's it. I'm cutting you off. No more. It's like, all right, it's working. You see the fruits of the parenting here. But there are some decisions, you know, as a parent, which is it's terrifying to let the kids make their own choices. Because, you know, especially when they're coming up on these critical life choices, you want so desperately to make them for them. But at some point, you've got to let them be themselves. And at some point, you've got to let them make mistakes. At some point, you've got to let them choose their own destiny, and it's terrifying. And I can't imagine it wasn't any different for God to allow you and me to choose our own fate, to choose in this life what direction we would go. And Easter is the story of the choices in life that we have, this choice about God. There's three crosses that you see in a typical Easter scene or setting. There's the cross in the center, which Jesus Christ was on, and there's a cross on either side, and each of those crosses represent a choice. The middle cross is the cross where Jesus was, and it represents and symbolizes the choice that God made for us, for once and for all, the choice he chose to love you and to love me. Now, there's some people who put out there this idea that Jesus sort of, finally, the Romans got the best of him. Finally, the religious leaders he was always at odds with, finally, all that stuff caught up with him. And they kind of surprised him at this moment when he was least expecting it. And they hauled him away to be arrested and crucified. And they're the ones who put him on the cross, that Judas outwitted him or outfoxed him in some sort of way. The religious leaders who've been trying to get a hold of him finally got their man. And that's what some people would try to put out there about it. But if you read through the Gospels and actually make a careful reading of this, it's very clear there was tons of times where they wanted to take his life. But he wouldn't let him, and he wouldn't let him, and he wouldn't let him. One of my favorite moments is, it's sort of this, it's straight out of the movie Tombstone, if you've ever watched that movie. There's so many great quotable lines of that old, it's like, what came out back, what, 91, 92? A lot of great quotable lines in there. One of the best lines in there is where Wyatt Earp, right after the shootout of the OK Corral, the town sheriff comes up to Wyatt Earp and says, Wyatt Earp, I need to arrest you. And he looks at him, and he goes, Sheriff, I don't think I'm going to let you arrest me today. And he just walks off, and the sheriff's kind of like, okay. John chapter 7, that happens. The authorities, the temple guards, go to arrest Jesus. They're given the directive, you need to go arrest him. And they go to arrest him, and he looks at him, he's like, no, I'm not going to let you arrest me today. And so they go back to their bosses, and they're like, well, where's he at? Well, he wouldn't let us arrest him. What do you mean he wouldn't let you? You're the authority. No, he's the authority. He told us, nope, not today. So we couldn't do it. And over and over and over again, he says, my time's not yet come. You can't arrest me. You can't arrest me. You can't arrest me. And then even as you move into his final week, you look in the book of Luke, and it says he resolutely set his gaze towards Jerusalem, knowing that's where he was going to give his life on the cross. And he picked the exact day and the exact time it would happen. He wanted to make sure it happened during Passover. And so he shares a Passover meal with his disciples. He doesn't tell the disciples where the Passover meal is going to be held. It's in an upper room, a secret location. Only two of them know, his two most trusted confidants. Why not tell the rest of the disciples? Because one of them is looking for an opportunity to betray him, and he knows that. So he didn't let Judas know where he's going. Judas finds out day of. They're sitting around the table, and Judas is trying to sit there the whole time thinking, how can I get him? How can I get him? How can I get him? And Jesus just comes over and says, hey, it's time. Go do what you got to do. You know where we're headed. He sends Judas on his way to betray him, knowing full well it's going to happen. He was picking the moments. Why? So he would ultimately be crucified on the cross at the same moment that the sacrificial lambs in Jerusalem were sacrificed on the day of Passover. He chose that day. He chose that time. It was all by his own choosing. And why would he do that? Because of his love for you and for me. You see, when Adam and Eve went their own way, and all of us, it says in Isaiah, have gone astray in the same way, we've all chosen to rebel against God. We've all chosen to say, I want to do what I want to do. The result, the consequence of that was eternal separation from God. He says, I don't want that. I want to have a relationship with you, and if that means I've got to die in your place, I will. And if you look at the prayer Jesus prays in the garden, and that's depicted right there in the Passion movie. By the way, I think that's the best opening scene of any movie of all time. For me, it displaced Empire Strikes Back as the best opening scene ever in a movie. Come on, that's a great movie, right? Empire Strikes Back, the opening scene, like in Hoth, you know, there with Snow scene, great. But that displaced it. That moment where he just stands up, and first of all, I don't really like snakes at all, so that would kind of just added to it. And it was this, right in that moment, they captured this resolute decision. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. And you see, in the moment, when you read in the book of Luke about this decision, it says he withdrew about a stone's throw from his disciples, and he knelt down and he prayed. He said, Father, if you're willing to take this cup from me, in other words, God, I don't want to go die on a cross. Nobody wants to go die on a cross. You know, sometimes people paint this, you know, Jesus just wanted to go there. No, nobody wants to go through what he went through. Not even Jesus wanted to go through that. But do you not go through things and do things for people that you love simply because you love them? In the midst of it, you're like, you know, I don't want to be here. I don't want to be doing this, but I'm doing this. Why? Because I love you. I will stand out in the freezing cold with sand blowing against my face on Sandbridge Beach. Why? Because I love you, kids, and you want to have an Easter egg hunt on the beach. Fine, so be it. I will do it. I will stand here for hour upon hour in the freezing cold. Why? So you can get a couple pieces of candy that I could have bought at the drugstore for $5. And that sacrifice is a paltry, it's an awful comparison to what Jesus went through for you and for me. But it says in that moment, he says, Father, if you're willing to take this cup from me, take it. And then here's his choice, but not my will, but yours. Now the background to what he's praying there is over in Psalm 116. For thousands of years, they've been singing Psalm 116 as they concluded the Passover meal. So he's just had a Passover meal with his disciples, and he's been singing this song, Psalm 116. Why do they sing it for all these years? They don't know, but this whole song was about this moment that Jesus would have in the garden. They would sing it not knowing it, and here it is on this moment. Jesus is singing it, and it becomes a reality for him. The words are the lyrics of what they've been singing at the Passover meal, where the cords of death entangled me. The anguish of the grave has come upon me, and I was overcome by trouble and sorrow. So I called out on the Lord, O Lord, save me, and I will lift up this cup of salvation. There, Lord, save me. Please don't let me take this cup. Please don't let me have to do this. It says, I will call upon the name of the Lord. And then it switches. Now picture him standing up and stomping the head of that snake as the lyric of this song goes through his mind. I will fulfill my vow to the Lord in the presence of these people. For precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints. O Lord, I am your servant. I am your servant, just the son of your maidservant. I will give a sacrifice, a thank offering to you for all who call upon your name. I will fulfill my vow to you. This is why I came. I came because I love you. I love you. I love you. I came because you needed a sacrifice. You needed me to die in your place. I love you. The cross is a monument to the choice God made to bridge the gap between you and him. That there's nothing ever that would separate you from him ever again. And all of us feel this, you know in your heart that sin separates. When you hurt somebody, you know there's a separation in that relationship. There's a distance that builds up in that relationship. There's a gap that builds up. And God says, you know, until somebody crosses over that, that gap remains. And I will cross over then. If what you need is grace and forgiveness and my death on the cross, I will die in your place. I will take that on. I will do that for you. So the cross of Christ is God's choice that he makes up front. I love you, and I will do whatever it takes to have a relationship with you. I say every Sunday, this life is about nothing more. All the good stuff, all the bad stuff, all the highs and the lows, this life is about nothing more than giving you the opportunity to choose whether or not you want to have a loving relationship with God that'll last for all eternity or not. That's what this life's about. God says, I choose you. I've made my choice. Now it's up to you. I've crossed the divide. I've bridged the gap. I've sacrificed my life for you. Now it's your choice. You get to choose. And so he's crucified there, and it's very interesting that he's crucified between two people. And each of them represents the choices that we have to make based on the choice that God made. On his left and on his right are two people who are being justly punished for things that they have done. In front of them are a whole crowd of people who are mocking him and making fun of him and saying, you know, hey, if you're really the Son of God, why don't you save yourself? Why don't you get down on there, off there? Why don't you make a different choice than what you've made? But no, love put him there and love has kept him there. And so on his left is this one guy who's being justly punished. And he looks over at Jesus and he says, hey, yeah, if you're the King of Jews, why don't you save yourself and me? Why don't you do something about this? You know, here's a guy who is so close to Jesus, yet he is so far from a relationship with him. He's right there seeing everything everybody else is seeing, and yet he just doesn't get it. See, in his mind, I would venture to say, based on what the other thief says back to him, I would look at this and say, I don't think this guy fully knows how to finish that Jimmy Buffett song. I think he's looking at it saying, some people claim there's somebody else to blame, and yeah, there probably is. You know, I may be here because of a few decisions I made, maybe not, I don't know, but at the end of the day, God, it's your fault I'm here. So God, why don't you get me out of this? Fix it. He doesn't want a relationship with Jesus. He just wants his problem to be solved. And for many people, that's their entire relationship with God. God, just solve my problems when I get into messes. Other than that, leave me alone. Let me do my own thing. On the other side is the exact opposite choice. On the other side is another guy who's justly being punished. And he looks over, and it's kind of this comedic moment almost. He's like, dude, what's wrong with you? He says, don't you fear God? I mean, seriously, we're up here because we deserve to be up here. We're up here because of the choices we made got us here. We are justly being punished as we deserved. But this guy, leave him alone. He didn't do anything to be up here. I mean, he didn't know the full extent of everything that led to Jesus being there. He just knew this one thing. He didn't deserve to be here. He must be here by his own choice. So he says, shut up. And then he turns to Jesus and he says, hey, Jesus, will you remember me when you come into your kingdom? Whatever's after this life, I don't know, but just will you remember me? And it's just this prayer where you can just tell where his heart's at. He's like, you know, I'm so done with saying it's nobody's fault or society's fault or my family's fault or anything else. I know I'm up on this cross because of the stuff I did and the stuff I deserve. And I don't have any, I'm in no place to come and demand anything of you. It kind of reminds me of the story that Jesus told in Luke 15 where he talks about this kid who rebels against his dad, decides he's going to choose a different life and a different path and a relationship with his dad. And so he wants to take his stuff and be out. And so he leaves off for a distant land and things don't go so well. And the consequences of his choices catch up with him. And eventually he's in dire straits. And it says in that moment, he came to his senses. He saw reality as it was. And he thinks, you know, I don't deserve to be a son or have a relationship with my dad. I can't go back and demand anything of him. I'm just going to go back and just beg that my dad would give me some mercy, that maybe he just might hire me just to be around so I can get something. And so that thief on the other side of Jesus, just remember me, you know, I don't, whatever, you know, send me a postcard. Let me come visit for a weekend. Whatever you can do, man, I need help. Whatever help you could offer, I'll take. It's a beggar's prayer. It's a prayer of need and desperation, of understanding where you're at and that you have no other options at this point. And Jesus says back to him, truly, I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise. Today you will be with me in paradise. Now, he's only asking, just remember me. Let me come visit for a weekend. Come down and say hi. And Jesus is like, no. I don't want you to just come visit. I don't want to just send you a postcard. I want to spend all eternity with you. And trust me, that begins today. That begins today. You see, the most important decision you will ever make in your life is what do you do with God? Do you run from it? Do you hide from it? Or do you accept that this world is his creation? And so am I. And we have a choice. Do I want to live in a relationship with him? Or do I not want to live in a relationship with him? And the choice is yours. And this life is all about this choice that you get to make. And this is the most important choice you will make, far more important than what you wear, far more important than who you marry, where you live, what you choose for your occupation or job, because this is a decision that lasts for all eternity. This was the best decision this guy ever made, is reaching out to Jesus and said, Jesus, I need grace. I need mercy. Can you give me that? Jesus says, oh yeah, that's why I'm here. I chose to be here for you. I will pay the ultimate price for you. And you may die and leave this life, but you'll live forever with me. So my question for you is what do you do with God? You know, to be in a relationship with anybody, you can't just be in a relationship with somebody and not have any sort of thing that interacts between them. Like, I've got a relationship with my kids, and there's a dynamic to that, right? I provide for them, I care for them, but I'm also trying to raise them and teach them the way they should go, and they need to get on board with that program and that plan, right? When you want to enter into a marriage, you understand that your independence goes out the window, and the two now become one flesh, and they're interacting with each other. And to be in a relationship doesn't mean you just give, whatever I want. It means, no, we're in this together. What you want is what I want. I want to make you happy in this. And if you're going to choose to have a loving relationship with God, it's like that. You don't just choose, hey, God, get me down from here, save me, then I can go do my own thing. We know that's not what relationships are. When you choose to enter in a relationship with Jesus Christ, you're asking him to enter in and say, God, it's you and me together for eternity. What do you want for my life? What direction do you want me to go? And what you'll find is everything he wants for you pushes you to make healthy and wise decisions in every other arena of your life. We're going to be looking at a lot of those decisions and choices you'll make over the next couple weeks. So my question for you this Easter is, what will you choose? Easter is a symbol to the entire world. God has chosen to love you with an unconditional, unquestionable love. What will you choose? Will you choose to reject, to mock, to be frustrated, to mad, to blame? Or will you choose to reach out and ask for his grace, for his mercy? At this point in the service, we typically move towards communion, where we look back on the impact and the need we have for this grace and forgiveness because of the death and resurrection of Jesus. But this week, we try to relive the last week of Jesus' life. And on Thursday night, we share in the Passover service together, where we focus in on and look at the price that Jesus paid for our sin. On Easter Sunday, we've always wanted to make this Sunday just about the resurrection, about the hope that we have because of this choice that is offered to you and offered to me. And so after I pray and give you the opportunity just to seek God out, I'm going to be showing us just a video that just kind of summarizes Easter. And in there, it highlights a relationship that Mary Magdalene had. We don't know much about her background other than the fact that it wasn't good and she was in a bad place and she needed mercy and she needed grace. And you can just put yourself in her position when she sees that Jesus has died. What she's lost is the only person who's ever showed her unconditional love. And then when she realizes that he's overcome the grave and he's alive, she cries out. And in the lyrics of the song, I just want you to key on it, says, look what mercy's overcome. If you've ever grown up or been taught or led to believe that God can't love you and you can't have a relationship with him because of mistakes you've made or things that you've done, you need to hear this morning, God loves you. He loves you. Mercy has overcome all of that. And if the thief on the cross next to him in one desperation prayer is with him now for all eternity, it's not too late for you to change the course and the direction of your eternal path either. Who knows, but God has brought you to this place and this time so that you might make this decision, this choice, this morning that will change your eternal future. Let's pray together. Let's sit back, reflect, and watch. Father, I just thank you for your love and for your grace. As we look to Easter, Father, may we look to your cross at the center. I know that you've chosen me. You've chosen love. You've chosen grace. You've chosen to forgive. You've chosen to overlook everything I've ever done, every mistake I've ever made. You chose in that moment. And Father, this moment we get to choose. This is our moment of decision. To just come in this morning see what you have to offer, then go our own way, or to choose this day to live in a relationship with you, to recognize our need for grace and for mercy. Father, as your word says, may we choose life. Choose life this morning. And just come before you and say, Lord, please forgive me for what I've done. I want to live in relationship with you from this day forevermore. I want to know what it is to love you, be in relationship with you, walk with you. God, I still have doubts and I still have questions and I still have worries and concerns and fears. But Father, I also know I need to make a choice about my relationship with you. And this morning, Father, I choose to enter into that relationship and seek your grace. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Essential Church Podcast. Let me encourage you to pause for a moment and reflect on what you've heard. It's not the hearing of the word, but the application that makes all the difference.